The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
So let's bring on our next guest here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Inside Human Impact, as we continue to acknowledge and celebrate women for International Women's Day. I have Ms. Megan Sylvester, who is a music psychologist, author, and researcher. Welcome, Ms. Sylvester. How are you?
Hi. Good morning. I'm fine. Thank you.
And just to briefly talk about, you know, the things that you've accomplished so far, you're a published author from the Caribbean, well, Trinidad and Tobago originally, and you are a UWE St. Augustine graduate who specializes in the sociology of music and is a Caribbean scholar, and your doctoral research focused on the narratives of resistance in Calypso and Raga Soca music, which is interesting. In terms of how it pertains to women, what has your research shown us thus far?
So thank you very much for having me. I just want to make one little change. You mentioned music psychologist, but I'm really a music sociologist. And that's okay. One of the things, and just to answer your question specifically, looking at the sociological impact of the society, how we see issues related to the society being impacted by music. And as you introduce the whole concept of women, how is that related to women? So it becomes important to think about musical genres. And in particular, I've done a lot of work, a lot of research on calypso and soca music. And so we see, if we look at issues related to feminist politics, issues related to feminism, as it is actualized within the calypso art form. So let's say we look at stage presentation, costuming, lyrics, the way in which women style themselves when they sing, or what are they singing about in comparison or juxtaposed to what men are singing about. So it becomes important to see how calypso, sociology, and society are intermingled and intermixed.
So we are directly making the link between how women see themselves and how, well, actually it should be from the opposite side, how men see women in these particular genres and how they've been presented over the years. Can you give a chronological order if there's been improvement on how women are looked at, or is it the added to the way that women are viewed in society based on those lyrics?
Right. And so if we could start, so I just want to do, as you mentioned, chronological order. So we're thinking about who is the first known female calypsonian in the text. It is not actually Calypso Rose. In the film Calypso Dreams, Calypso Rose actually says that the first woman that she saw in the tent was Lady Irie. So you had Lord and Lady Irie being in the tent. And so we take it, though, in terms of costuming, presentation of self, stage performance, it's really Calypso Rose that most of us are familiar with. And we see that there are times when she would dress in a regal fashion, all right? Meaning she's covered from head to toe. There are times when she would win the crown. She would actually wear a crown on her head. And then we think about singing Sandra. You think about how she used to dress herself. And how that also, she started off dressing, you know, when she was with the group, United Sisters, she dressed in a particular way. And then we saw as she graduated into this sort of maternal role in Calypso, because she was, of course, helping a lot of other women and making sure that they were part of the fraternity and understood the fraternity in a particular way. She dressed in African garb, all right? We can think about seeing Francine, and we see that her too, like the others, they would have dressed, you know, in regular clothes, and then they started to wear the African garb. So if we look at Calypso, we look at it like that. Those three black women, Calypso Rose, singing Francine, and singing Sandra. When we think about Denise Plummer, we see that she also graduated into this, because of course she was singing pop music first the beginning of her career, and as she got further and was accepted in the Calypso art form, we see that she started to wear these costumes, the hair and the jewelry and the makeup and the costumes, to actually represent nationhood and nation building. And we see in every video that Denise from her heart, she would, you know, she would have her hands up in the air, mm-hmm. and she'd be talking about, you know, and she'd do a dance in her videos. You know, we talk about woman as boss, we talk about not leaving, and mm-hmm. we think about how she presented herself. So mm-hmm. it becomes important to think about that presentation chronologically.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of men, I'm not certain or that I can see at this time that it is about that women were doing that because of how men saw them, because I know that you mentioned that earlier. Mm-hmm. I think it's about a conscious, intentional effort by the woman to present themselves in a particular way in which they wanted to be seen as or vis-a-vis the art form that they were performing in. What does Calypso mean? How do people see Calypso? It is a serious music, political commentary, social commentary, nation-building songs. And so this is why I believe they presented themselves in that.
So it was more to solidify their message in terms of their song at the point in time that they dressed in that particular way to highlight that they owned their space. Would you say that was the intention?
That is what it seems to me from the research that I've done, looking at a lot of performances, looking at a lot of still photos, and in some cases getting an opportunity to interview some of those women. There is an intentionality. Mm-hmm. How are we going to style ourselves? How do we want the world to see us? All right.
Mm-hmm. Now, moving forward to the younger ones, what the change? Because it's the way that you spoke about the three women singing Francine, singing Sandra, Denise Plummer, they dressed in a particular way. But the newer age now, what do you think has changed along the way that they are now presenting themselves in, can't say all, but some are presenting them in more scantily clad performance outfits? What brought on that change?
Right. So I'm not necessarily going to do a chronological order to respond to this question. I'm just going to pick a few persons who mm-hmm. we're most familiar with. So let's look at Destra, for example. Let's look at Nadia Batson. Let's look at Nyla Blackman. And we could also look at Patrice Roberts. So soca music is a different vibe.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Understand that calypso is the root. It is mother music. And then there are these spin-offs. You know, you have chutney soca, raga soca, groovy soca, you know, and you have the power soca. So we have soca music. And what does it signify? What does it mean? So we're looking at it from a sociological standpoint. And this is music that was sort of, while calypso music grew up alongside the festival of carnival, we recognize that in the mid-70s, Rashotia is saying, listen, we need something. Yeah, to change the beat.
Mm-hmm.
So that soca becomes this dominant force or this dominant type of music that begins to accompany the carnival as well. So, but what is calypso about? It's about upbeat, different beats per minute. And mm-hmm. we see now it is about dancing in the streets. It's about party music.
Right.
And so what happens when representative of party music or a representative of a party vibe?
Mm-hmm.
The way in which you attire yourself or costume yourself is going to be different.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the whole use of the word scantily clad. And I think that when we, based on the research that I have done and in interviews that I have conducted, what is important to note is that there's a lot of competition in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And so the women are competing against each other. Because of the onset of social media and what that means, it's about likes, it's mm-hmm. about clicks, it's about presence, it's about visibility. So mm-hmm. there's a way in which and I don't really want to use the word succumb, but it's a response. Mm-hmm. You're asking, why do I think this has happened? It's like a response to this new space. We understand, you know, with some of those social media platforms, you have a lot of filters that people use. So people want to present themselves in their best way.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also to garner, because it's a money-making business. So we have to understand that. What is going to allow for me to make the most money? How am I going to be seen? How am I going to be most visible? It's also about understanding the nature of a party, whether it's in the streets or in a club or wherever. It's about being loose and free. And so the clothing that you wear is going to be linked to that.
And it will be associated with where you are and the particular genre as well. Yeah, so you're saying that soca is associated more with the street parade, party and so on. And to clarify, when I said scantily clad, I did do the air quotes, but we're on radio, mm-hmm. so you
right.
know how to let people know.
Yeah,
because the opinion is that it's not necessary to dress in that way, but we have the image of Beyonce and others who do R&B music and so on that are just basically the same style. And as you said, it is about, you know, making an impact and garnering that attention so that there would be the clicks and the likes and therefore subscriptions and those buying the music, etc. So it's all about, as you say, image. In terms of the idea of empowering women and accelerating progress, how do we have the discussions and garner the narratives so that this could be understood and bring forward so that the industry is understood, especially for women in entertainment and those wanting to get into entertainment?
I think it's about understanding who you are. At the top of the interview, I mentioned the words feminist politics and feminism. I also want to add in femininity and womanhood. Mm-hmm. I did some research where I spoke to about 7 women across various genres of Trinidad and Tobago music. And it is important to think about how women want to style themselves. So a sense of womanhood, a sense of femininity comes from the genre and comes from how the woman wants to see herself. That is where the power and the empowerment comes from. Mm-hmm. And I think it is important for people who follow different genres of music to think about issues of respectability politics. What is respectable behavior? What says that we can appreciate this person in who they are and who they profess to be and how they demonstrate themselves? So it's about understanding that the person is not necessarily aligned to the genre and the stage performance, and that there is respectability in the activity once it is conducted in a particular way. Now, we understand that when someone wants to debase themselves or wants to, you know, become, and I'm going to do the air quotes, ratchet behavior.
Yes.
That's completely different. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But there is respectability politics in the music. There's respectability politics in, if we take it outside of the musical genre and we think about CEOs, we think about back managers, we think about people in academia, people who head up institutions. There's a way in which we have to think about women empowerment and respectability politics and what that actually means within our space of Trinidad and Tobago.
And I wanted to add as well, there is a sort of policing that happens when women express themselves in these areas, and the importance of understanding, well, this is for performance, and once I get off the stage, in other words, my personality is not attached to what you see on stage, and there's a difference. How important it is to recognize and to remind people about that. How do we do that?
I want to take it from a sociological standpoint in terms of thinking about, and I'm just going to use a technical term, symbolic interactionism, as a theory, in terms of the symbols that we see. So that the person goes on the stage and they are costumed and they perform in a particular way. Mm-hmm. And as you said, as they come off the stage, there's a different personality. This policing takes place because many members of the society are not able to extricate the persona or the person that they see performing and the person who is off the stage. Mm-hmm. And that is where we have a challenge. In every walk of life, you know, Irvin Goffman, who is a sociologist, has spoken about the presentation of self in everyday life, which is about acting. People who go on a stage to perform are acting a part. They are the performer. When they step away from the stage, they're no longer a performer. But this happens in all aspects of life. Mm-hmm. When we think about when you go to work, all right, you are acting in the role of the title of your job. But when you are at home, we're speaking about women, you are a mother, a sister, aunt, a wife, a friend, a female friend. Mm-hmm. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that is what I think it becomes important to understand, that we ought not to be policing females who are in prominent positions, because the stage could be anywhere. The stage doesn't necessarily have to be an entertainment stage. Mm-hmm. All right. When there is, let's say a woman is the CEO of a company and she goes to address a large audience of persons, she's on a stage and she's speaking, but people think that that is who she is all the time. Mm-hmm. All right. And that becomes a challenge. So I think that is where we really need to start to think about who this person is and how we look at our own lives as women.
And also to give the tools to younger women who would like to be in that industry, the tools to be able to separate the two, as we just discussed, as we just talked about, so that their mental health can be preserved as well. Because when you get mm-hmm. on to, as you said, there are many tools that weren't there before in the times of, say, let's say, Singing Sandra, Lady Francine, and so on, the social media aspect of it. Once you put up a performance or image of yourself in that role, then the comments come and how you be able to, you know, keep your mind buffered from taking on too much of that negative or comments that are coming from that situation.
Mm-hmm. People need to understand that everyone is a role model, all right? Because you are performing a role. You're performing mm-hmm. a role every day, all right? We ought not to have a different standard for somebody who becomes prominent, for somebody who is more visible, because mm-hmm. all of us are on the same level. If we think about life, you know, and oftentimes we haven't mentioned it, neither you nor I, but I'm going to mention it now. Sometimes women are the greatest critics of women.
Oh, that is very true. I agree.
And you're thinking now about the young woman that you mentioned. If we have to be role models to, if older women or you know, people who are more prominent in society have to be role models to younger women and to help them along the way and teach them what we know, we can't be judging them, right, or policing their behavior in a negative way. Instead, what we need to do is to explain. Mm-hmm. Give them a sense of what is, it's about time and place and space.
Mm-hmm.
What is accepted in this particular place? That is why you can be on the stage, perform in a particular way. Let's look at Destra as an example, right? Destra is a mother.
Mm-hmm.
She has to perform the role of being an entertainer on the stage. And when she steps off the stage, she has to be a mother. She has to be a wife. You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so this is what we have to teach younger women, that there are roles that we play and that we must understand the necessity or the requirements of the role. And that is how we are empowered. All right? In each space and place, we mm-hmm. perform the role to the best of our ability.
And I want to touch on another topic, scenario that you've presented. Well, in your life, I recognize that you were out in Washington, D.C. and talking about Black History Month, and you were invited by Howard University. What was that experience like? And could you tell us a little bit more about your time there in D.C. and what are some of the things that you brought back that probably... for Trinidad and Tobago in terms of furthering culture and that space, and how women can be involved in that as well?
Right. So just a little correction. That opportunity was created by Howard University, but in particular, it was coming out of the Caribbean American Heritage Month initiative. Why? Because this was the first time that at the White House for Black History Month, Caribbean nationals were being allowed,
yes,
to speak on behalf of Black History Month. Because hither to that, what you had was African Americans, because that is really part of their culture, right? Mm-hmm. Black History Month is really being celebrated by African Americans, and that's how it would have started. And that was an opportunity to speak to Bob Marley, because of course the movie was coming out on February 14th, and about the celebration of Reggae Month in Jamaica, mm-hmm. of course commemorating, because February is a special month in terms of Jamaica, in terms of Bob Marley's birthday, etc. And we had the event on the 7th, which was a day after Bob Marley's birthday.
Yeah.
And it was all about looking at the impact of his music on Black consciousness in the U.S. And so that was a really wonderful opportunity. There were two women on the panel. One, everybody else on the panel, I might add, was from Jamaica. I was the only mm-hmm. Trinidadian who was there, Trinbegonian who was there. And for me, what that symbolized was an opportunity to do two things. I know that we're talking about women, but mm-hmm. I'm also talking about nation. All right? I was very proud to be the only Trinidadian, Trinbegonian, representing Trinidad and Tobago there. Secondly, I was very proud to be a female chosen to do that, to represent, right, about music of the Caribbean mm-hmm. and to share my views and perspectives about Bob Marley, this iconic figure, though not Trinidadian, but who supersedes the Caribbean, who supersedes, you know, the world in terms of understanding the impact of his music, and then bring it back to understanding his impact mm-hmm. of his music on Black consciousness in the U.S. We also spoke about, in particular, I spoke about the impact of his music on the Caribbean. Yes. And so it was important that you know, women were able to be seen. That initiative, just to add, was really spearheaded by Claire Nelson, Dr. Claire Nelson, who is a woman. And she actually was responsible for establishing or bringing together this concept of Caribbean American Heritage Month. So in terms of women leading the charge, we spoke earlier about roles and about young women. It is important that young women see women in roles like that.
Like that, yes,
so
I agree.
They know where they can reach. And even within the world of music and entertainment, it is important for people to see those types of examples.
From those discussions, how would the celebrations be for next year? And how are the discussions going to start for acknowledging the involvement of the Caribbean in the history of America and the way that the Caribbean has shaped Black history overall? Can that, or has that discussion started already?
It has started already prior to this event, because that is mainly what Caribbean American Heritage Month, June, is all about. You know, it's about signaling and signifying and showcasing what Caribbean Americans have done to make an impact on that particular space. All right. And so these conversations have been going on for a while. And they're only going to get better, because it's about acknowledgement. And within that, just to make sure that we keep that point about women are critically involved in that entire process. So it's about showcasing the different ways. And I love the idea, because it's about understanding that the islands, in terms of the contribution that women have made, the contribution that the islands have made to, you know, who and what the United States is. You know, oftentimes we hear about other groups, right? Other groups, and how they have contributed. And it is important to think about all these years of migration, what has it added up to? And how have women played a part in this role? So it's good that that initiative was spearheaded initially by a woman.
And just to make the note as well, the inception or the creation of festivals along the Caribbean islands and in America to foster communities, Caribbean communities within America, is very important in terms of the culture and the way that the culture has developed and spread across and maintained. I think that's something that should be acknowledged as well and probably documented if we can.
Absolutely. All right. Carnivals. If we're talking of a specific festival, because there are many types of festivals, we talk about carnival, we talk about the way in which we have several satellite carnivals. Of course, as Trinidadians, you know, the mother of all carnivals.
Yes.
But there have been so many, you know, offshoots all over the world. I mean, we know the dominant ones in New York, etc. But there have been so many others, you know, Baltimore, Los Angeles, so many. And then in the
Caribbean.
Exactly, right. So those are the ones that we know, right? But when we move away from Notting Hill and Caribbean and you know, the Labor Day Parade, we know that there's so many others. And so that is one of the tangible ways that we can say, you know, distinctively, that we have made this contribution. But there's so many other ways in which people across all walks of life are making contributions in the field of academia, in the field of sport, in the field of, you know,
economics,
you know, just being, exactly,
politics.
Exactly. And it is important for those are the stories that we need to tell our young women about where women can reach and what women have done. And I think that's critically important in our storytelling.
Well, we've just on the nose of 11 o'clock. Ms. Sylvester, I want to thank you so much for joining us and giving that information and encouragement to the young women who are listening. You know, that there are other roles besides the normal rooms that are projected ever so often. So it will be interesting for them to do that research and to step into that realm. And I want to thank you so much for joining us on Freedom 106.5 FM.
Hey, thank you so very much for having me and giving me the opportunity.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.